From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. President Trump's economic agenda has been backed up behind the debate over health care, but some elements are clear. He plans what he calls massive tax cuts, and the budget outline he released comprises more spending on the military and veterans, along with deep cuts in almost every other agency, nearly a third of the EPA budget targeted, for example, and about one-fifth of the National Institutes of Health. We asked two economists how the Trump agenda would reshape Maryland's economy.
Hardest hit parts of our state under this current budget would be the I-270 corridor. They're going to get slammed. There are millions of square feet of vacant office space already along the I-270 corridor. It's going to get much, much worse.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. President Trump's goals for reshaping the U.S. economy are starting to take shape. As the contentious arguments over his health care proposal show, his plans may be reshaped by the Republican Congress, but it's not too soon to start assessing what the Trump economic agenda might mean for Maryland. Two economists who focus a lot on Maryland's economy are joining me to discuss it. With us by phone is Darius Irani, Vice President of Innovation and Applied Research at Towson University and Chief Economist for the Regional Economic Studies Institute there. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sheila.
And with me in the studio is Anirban Basu, President and CEO of the Sage Policy Group, and a familiar voice to WYPR listeners through his daily economic report. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you, Sheila.
So the budget outline the Trump administration published in mid-March was kind of a wake-up call for many Americans who weren't sure how thoroughly President Trump would follow up on his campaign rhetoric. The budget plan calls for very deep cuts in almost all federal discretionary spending, except military spending. And the shrinkage of so many federal agencies and programs would probably mean elimination of many federal jobs. Anirban Basu, what is your take on the kind of budget the Trump administration is proposing, and what impact do you think it would have in Maryland?
Thank you, Sheila. It doesn't yet have the force of law, of course. Congress passes the budget ultimately. This is the administration's proposal. We know that there's only three significant agencies that are recommended for funding increases. That's the Department of Veteran Affairs, that's Homeland Security, and the Department of Defense. Everything else is slated for significant cuts, in many cases, deep cuts. And people know about the Department of State, but there's also some very pro-business agencies like the Commerce Department and Housing and Urban Development, agencies that empower businesses often to gain information, acquire information necessary for business planning, or to actually develop properties like Housing and Urban Development. They're slated for deep cuts as well. I think overall, it's a sharp net negative for Maryland's economy. One of the agencies that's expected to be cut is Health and Human Services. A lot of proposed cuts in medical research. Johns Hopkins, of course, is a leading recipient of NIH grants. NIH would be cut sharply. This is not good for Maryland's economy. People will say, well, what about defense and homeland security? Some benefit there, particularly in places like Anne Arundel and Harford counties. But a lot of that defense spending will take place in other states because this is about rearming the military. This is about building tanks and ships and airplanes. And a lot of that doesn't take place in Maryland.
Darius Irani, what do you think about the Trump budget?
I mean, I have to say, I agree with Anirban. I mean, we're very dependent. Maryland's 5% of Maryland's labor force directly employed by the federal government. It's a significant number of people driving to D.C. every day. And the concern is obviously there's not only a budget, but there's also a potential reorganization of the executive branch to look for efficiencies. There's been some talk about a RIF, a reduction in force in the federal government. But again, as Anirban pointed out, this does not become law until Congress passes it. And many congressmen, both Republican and Democrats, are wildly opposed to this because, again, it does impact many of the pro-business parts of the federal government. The Small Business Administration, even the Appalachian Regional Councils are going to be adversely affected, which helps our Western Maryland counties who do need help in economic development. So this budget, as draconian it is a very small probability of passing, but tragically, it does set the tone as to what is to be forthcoming in the next 4 years.
Anubhan, I want to pick up on what you said about defense being one of the few areas where President Trump intends to increase spending. And you were pretty quick to say, yeah, we have a lot of defense employees in Maryland, but we shouldn't expect more from increased military spending. Walk me through that a little bit more.
No, I think military spending is a net positive for Maryland. Don't get me wrong. We have a major Northrop Grumman plant in Linthicum. We have Aberdeen Proving Ground, a major employer, Patuxent River Naval Air Station, largest employer in southern Maryland, of course. We have a lot of defense establishments, defense contractors in places like Howard and Anne Arundel County. All I'm pointing out is that those gains will not offset the decreases in federal agency spending among civilian agencies. And therefore, it's a sharp net negative for Maryland's economy. And as I point out, this is not about necessarily administering defense programs. A lot of that takes place in Maryland, as it turns out, or in Washington, D.C., or in Northern Virginia, in this region of the country. This is about rearming the military. It's about manufacturing, in many cases, airplanes, ships, tanks, so on and so forth. A lot of that activity doesn't take place here. Some of it does, but disproportionately takes place in other places. And so the defense spending gains will not offset the cuts to civilian agencies, particularly those that do medical research, for instance. That's very impactful. One of the hardest hit parts of our state under this current budget would be the I-270 corridor. They're going to get slammed. There are millions of square feet of vacant office space already along the I-270 corridor. It's going to get much, much worse if this budget, as Darius suggests, and I think he's right, sets the tone for the ultimate budget to be passed by Congress.
That's Anubhan Basu, president and CEO of the Sage Policy Group, an economic consulting firm, here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Also with us is Darius Irani, chief economist for the Regional Economic Studies Institute at Towson University. I want to make sure I understand, Darius, maybe you have some thoughts on this, kind of what the ripple effects, aside from direct employment, people who work directly for the federal government, what you think happens to people who work for companies that have contracts with the federal government.
Yeah, so, you know, we did say 5% of our labor force is directly employed, so another 10% is probably indirectly employed. And many of our counties, Howard County, for example, many of the workforce drives into D.C. every day. And if that were to diminish, that would certainly hurt, you know, Howard County's economic prospects. It is a big impact. We are more dependent upon the federal government than most other states, with the exception of D.C. and maybe Virginia. So when the federal government pulls back its dollars, and, you know, Anubhan is certainly correct, we're not going to be building missiles and planes and tanks. We're going to be maybe managing a new program, but that'll be one or two additional people maybe per program. It won't be a big impact, as say in, you know, Mobile, Alabama, where they might be assembling some of these components. So we are set to lose tremendously, not only directly, but indirectly, all the businesses that support these employees, or even contractors that are set to support some of these local programs. Many of the programs, even in the non-military side, are supported by private sector contractors. And if those budgets get cut, they get impacted as well.
Last week, we learned that before the election, in the year ending last July, Baltimore, the city of Baltimore, lost about 1% of its population, while the suburbs gained residents. Anubhan Basu, where do you think that trend is going, and does it intersect with the Trump economic agenda in some way?
Yes, it might. It's a very negative result, that census report on city population, of course, losing 1% of the city's population in just 1 year. Many other cities, by the way, are adding significant population, Seattle, Denver, so on and so forth. So, you know, it's not as if all cities are losing population. Baltimore is somewhat of a special case right now. Actually, the demographics for urban America are very supportive. The most common age in America today is 25. We have more 25-year-olds than any other age. And 25-year-olds like to live in cities disproportionately. So this should have been a period where Baltimore's adding a lot of population. Some will point out that this immediately followed the unrest in the city in April of 2015. That's true. But my feeling has been that there has, for many years now, been a pent-up demand to move out of the city. Many people were underwater on their mortgages when property values fell. Now property values have risen, fewer people are underwater, and if they want to sell, they could sell. The fact that the city schools continue to be in a state of at least financial chaos doesn't create confidence. And the fact that the city has produced more than 300 homicides each of the last 2 years doesn't help either. These 25-year-olds in the next 5 to 10 years will turn 30 and then 35. They're going to start to get married, have children, and guess where they're going? Towson, White Marsh, Hunt Valley, Glen Burnie, Columbia, Catonsville. This should have been a golden era for Baltimore City demographics. It wasn't. And now we're going to face some real headwinds demographically. And so I don't think we're at the end of this. This is not just a one-year blip. This is a trend, potentially, of declining population in the city, unless this mayor, this new mayor, Catherine Pugh, can change the narrative, restore confidence, and keep more people here who want to be part of the upside.
Darius Hirani, any thoughts about where the population is heading? Maryland as a whole did not lose population in this interim report. So do you think there's an impact on the state's economy, or is this particularly a Baltimore problem?
Well, it's both, because as the city goes, so goes the state. The city, you know, struggles with the school system, both financially, and Anibon's correct. I mean, if people are moving out in their mid-20s out of the city, that doesn't bode well for the people that are, you know, in their 30s and starting a family. So until the city and the mayor can have an impact on this, of getting the schools right, getting the murder rate down, making it a safe place to live, you know, we'll see this continuous trend of people moving out, hollowing out the city slowly but surely. And the problem is that basically then you have basically what's left in the population is people who can't move out. You look at Detroit and look at the vast areas where it's depopulated and basically how the services are stretched so thin. So the concern is the city needs to right itself, and it has an opportunity under a new mayor to right itself. Schools, public safety are so critical for families to remain in the city. And if the city feels unsafe or doesn't feel good quality schools, families vote with their pocketbook and move out to the suburbs where they feel safer and have great schools.
Getting back to the Trump agenda, let me ask either one of you who wants to jump in a bit about regulation. It's clear that the Trump administration sees a much smaller role for the Environmental Protection Agency. The president has appointed an EPA director with a record of trying to block some of the agency's actions. And now we see this budget outline with EPA facing very deep cuts, including cuts in the program to clean up the Chesapeake Bay. What impact do you think either the regulatory philosophy or the spending cuts have in Maryland?
You know, Sheila, yesterday I was speaking in Texas, and they love some of this stuff, right? Because they want to build pipelines. They're very fond of fossil fuels. Texas is a leading producer of oil and natural gas. So there is a group out there that really likes the notion of deregulation of energy, deregulation of banking, looser environmental restrictions. They like this. They think this is pro-business. But it's not necessarily pro-business in Maryland. Because what makes Maryland, including Central Maryland, so special is the Chesapeake Bay. And we are desperate to clean it. We are desperate to grow the industry that supports watermen, the seafood industry here. And that requires a cleaner bay, but also to enjoy the bay, a healthier environment. We care deeply about this. And it's not just the Chesapeake Bay. It's Meals for Wheels and all kinds of other things that I don't think are really very good for Maryland, the people of Maryland. I mean, one of the things you asked was, how would the budget relate to Baltimore City? Baltimore City depends heavily upon government services. To the extent that the federal government funds those services, this really hits the city hardest, harder than any of the other 23 major jurisdictions in Maryland. I take heart in the fact that this is the administration's budget. It does not have the force of law. And Congress is going to have a chance to amend this, and they're going to amend it quite significantly.
Darius, you want to jump in?
I would agree. I mean, the Chesapeake Bay is our jewel, and if we're now proposing not to keep it clean, it's going to revert back to where it was in the, you know, 80s and 70s, where it was failing. We've got our Inner Harbor, which we're sort of slowly cleaning up. You know, there is a role that the government can play in terms of regulation, and some have agreed that maybe we've gone a bit too far, but there's a kind of a balancing act. You don't want to go to where you basically have completely got rid of it, and you don't want to have too much of it. There's a nice fine medium level that's just right. Concern I have is we are going way to one extreme, and we're going to get rid of cleanup efforts for the Chesapeake Bay. And Baltimore City does depend upon the federal government. Everything from housing, HSA, a lot of federal funds flow into many state agencies here in the state. So losing those dollars is going to have an adverse impact on the most vulnerable population in the state and the city.
We need to take a short break here. Our two economists, Darai Sarani and Anubhan Basu, are staying with us. When we come back, I want to zero in on President Trump's hopes for tax cuts. I'm Sheila Cass. This is On the Record. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking this morning about Maryland's economy and how it could be affected by the Trump administration's policies. With me in studio is Anubhan Basu, president and CEO of the Sage Policy Group, an economic consulting firm. And with us on the phone is Darai Sarani, chief economist for the Regional Economic Studies Institute at Towson University. I'd like to turn from anticipated spending cuts to tax cuts. Darai, the president says he has a fabulous tax plan he can't propose until Obamacare is dealt with. What kinds of tax cuts are you anticipating?
Well, I suspect the tax cuts will probably focus on corporations, high-income individuals seem to be a target, and maybe some middle-class tax cuts. Looking at the proposal for the health care, it doesn't seem to be that we're seeing a broad-based tax cut. The other concern you have is even though we're cutting spending, we're not necessarily dropping the overall spending down. So if we layer on some tax cuts, that may adversely impact our budget deficit as well as our federal debt.
But let me try to make sure I understand. I mean, government spending generally stimulates the economy. If that's been cut back, is it entirely the hoped-for tax cuts that would stimulate the economy to bring the kind of economic growth that President Trump has promised?
That seems to be sort of the theory. You know, tax cuts, I think it seems to be a strong Republican mantra that we lower taxes, we'll stimulate the economy, and we'll grow. The empirical evidence seems to be rather thin on that. And given the proposed budget we see right now, we're not really lowering spending. We're just kind of shifting spending from one area to another area. So I would argue that yeah, the tax cuts sound wonderful, but I think part of it is that the reasoning behind them in terms of will it stimulate economic activity, I'm not 100% sure that's going to work.
Anubhan Basu, what are your thoughts about what the tax cuts will do for economic growth, assuming they materialize?
Sure. So, I mean, the president, when he was campaigning, talked about corporate tax reform, and actually that's a bipartisan issue. Barack Obama in 2012 campaigned on reducing the corporate tax rate from 35% to 28%. His Republican challenger, Mitt Romney, argued that it should go down to 25%, but they basically agreed on the issue. So for a number of years, both Democrats and Republicans have said that corporate tax rate is too high. We need to reduce that corporate tax rate, and we need to take away some of the exemptions so that this becomes revenue neutral. But we simplify compliance, and I think that that's right. So the president has suggested, Donald Trump has suggested, going from 35% to 15%. That won't happen. But I could imagine something below 35%, some tax reform where there is tax simplification and some rate reduction. Will it be revenue neutral? I think Darai is right, probably not revenue neutral. But that in and of itself, I don't think will break the budget. It's the personal income taxes. That proposed reform, moving to just three marginal tax brackets, including reducing the highest tax bracket significantly down to 28%, that could really break the budget. As you know, the national debt is now $20 trillion. The federal budget deficit is still around 3% of GDP. The deficit is not 3% of the budget. The deficit, the federal budget deficit is 3% of gross domestic product. That's still a big number. Yes, it's down from 10% a few years ago, but it's still a big number. So people are complaining about these cuts to the various agencies, but the fact of the matter is Medicare is set to go insolvent in 2028, Social Security in 2034. So if it's not now, a lot of these agencies are going to be cut in the future. If people saw less of an increase in defense spending, they wouldn't be so opposed to this budget because it would speak to long-term national solvency. But this shift toward defense and away from some of these civilian agencies, I think that has a lot of people upset because it doesn't make much progress in terms of reducing the federal budget deficit or the national debt, but it does hurt a lot of people who depend on services.
And I would also add that by taking entitlements off the table you're really only addressing the small portion of the discretionary budget, which requires draconian cuts to make any significant amount of change in our federal debt and deficit. And I do think that at some point we do need to address the entitlements program, Medicare and Social Security, going forward. Otherwise, it will completely swamp the rest of the budget. And we'll be having this discussion for the next several generations.
This is On the Record on WIP. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with two economists about how President Trump's economic policies might play out in Maryland. Anirban Basu is president and CEO of the Sage Policy Group, and Darius Arani is chief economist for the Regional Economic Studies Institute at Towson University. I was struck that one of your colleagues, the conservative economist Peter Morici at the University of Maryland, seemed to be questioning whether President Trump, whose policies he has supported, can make good on the economic growth he needs. Morici pointed out that Barack Obama, his economy was generating about 186,000 new jobs a month, and that only produced a little over 2% economic growth. And Morici said President Trump would need another 100,000 or so new jobs every month to get to the 3 or 4% growth that he wants. How does it look to you, Anirban?
Well, you know, growth is what? It's labor force growth plus productivity growth. So if you're going to accelerate the pace of growth of the economy, you've got to bring more people into the labor market. And by the way, we have a lot of idleness in this country. The labor force participation rate in our country is 63%. It's just a few tenths of a percentage point above a 38-year low. So we've got a lot of idleness. Millions of people who could be working, probably should be working, are not working for various reasons. And then you've got to take the labor force and make it more productive. And we haven't talked about one aspect of Trump's economic proposals, which is his infrastructure-led stimulus package. You know, the nation's infrastructure is woefully inadequate. The American Society of Civil Engineers recently released its report and graded American infrastructure as a D+. But in many categories, we're less than a D+, and we're not making much improvement. So if the president could forge a trillion-dollar infrastructure-led stimulus package financed through tax credits and public-private partnerships, there's something about that that actually makes sense. And if that allows Americans to become more productive, to spend less time in traffic, for instance, maybe that helps us get to 3 or 4% growth. This economy has not grown at 3% or better since 2005. That was more than a decade ago. So we've had some structural issues. The president wants to bring people back to work. He wants to make them more productive. I'm willing to give him a chance. I don't think this budget will get us there, by the way. But we haven't seen really the infrastructure-led stimulus package join the agenda yet. Let's see what that looks like. That's an important piece of this.
The infrastructure package would be an important piece of it, but Darius Arani, it would also have a big impact on the deficit.
Right. In that sense, basically what we're investing in ourselves. And that's the critical thing. These infrastructure that we've got, the roads, our bridges, our sewer systems, they're all reaching the end of their useful life. And we've been doing these repairs sort of, you know, one-off. You know, every winter you hear about Baltimore City's sewer systems failing, they're having to repair them. We've got roads that are failing. Improving the roads, improving our infrastructure will yield benefits for us for years to come. So this is the kind of spending that kind of makes sense for us as a nation to invest in ourselves, not only this, but in education. But so these are areas where we get the big bang for the buck. If this is able to be done, this will then move the economy to a higher growth rate than we've experienced because it increases our productivity. Less time spent in traffic, especially with our just-in-time inventory approach of our truckers. If they're stuck in traffic, it means the piece can't be delivered. That means that the output can't be done. So it's critical that we get this right. And I will say that that's an entirely right thing to do.
Let me ask one other quick thing before I let you both go, and that is the president has talked about tariffs on imports as a way to boost production for American companies, as a way to sort of clear the space for them. Do you have any sense of how the president's trade policies might affect Baltimore's port, Darius?
The question is, if we impose tariffs, other countries will likely impose tariffs to be protected. So we might see a net reduction in activity. Recall that more than half of the imported goods that come into the U.S. are intermediate goods used in production, so that could have an adverse effect not only in the port but also across the country in manufacturing, especially.
Anirban, any thoughts on the port?
Well, you know, they're not necessarily calling it a tariff, right? They're calling it a border adjustment tax. a value-added tax, but it would favor exports and basically penalize imports. And the goal is to try to create an environment in which Americans have a tendency to buy more things from other Americans, things produced by Americans. One would think, all things being equal, that this would stimulate exports and would weaken imports. The Port of Baltimore, therefore, would be neutral. Neutral impact on the port, because the volume they're losing in terms of imports would be made up by exports. I don't think it's so simple, and Darius is right. I think people would look at that policymaking as anti-free trade and that it might invite retaliation. And in fact, many economists out there are suggesting that the leading threat to the global economy right now is trade wars. So the administration has got to be very careful.
I'm grateful to you both for giving us so much to think about. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheila.
Anirban Basu is president and CEO of the Sage Policy Group and does a daily economic report here on WYPR. Darius Arani is vice president of innovation and applied research at Towson University and chief economist for the Regional Economic Studies Institute there. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening to On the Record. Join us again tomorrow.